A guy came to me and he says, well, what kind of show do you do? I said, I do a show about letter carriers. Man, it's about what they do in labor. So he says, I said, it's like a labor magazine sometimes. So he says, okay, well, how can I get it? I said, go to lover.com. So he has a laptop. So we go to lover.com, just like that, you know? So my show wasn't on, right? So I said, well, just, you know, look at anything you want to look on it. So he looks on there. He says, "What is this? What kind of website is this?" I said, "I don't know what kind of website. How do you like it?" He says, "Well, it's pornography." I said, "No, it isn't." I said, "No, it isn't. Don't go there. Just keep looking." And then I said, "So we were at some new pictures." So I said, "Okay, new part. I can't remember what show it was." I said, "Go to schedule." Went to the schedule. "You see my show? Okay, just go to that and look at my show because I see you can't take the rest." So, just like that. So that's what I tell people.
F U funny. The N the nudity is just a fraction of what
that's
is
right.
there.
And when
but
go,
people just go like
go
right,
right
to
it. They always go, "Ooh, I want to see," but then they want to go, "Ah, but I don't want to see." You know how freaky it is.
Yeah.
We all freaked out.
Yeah.
Our society is so freaked out, it's unbelievable.
Like ninety-five percent of lover is not nudity.
Nudity. But they always go to the nudity bar. Everybody goes to that first. Everybody goes to the nudity first.
I wonder
first.
How they figure that out, even. Like, how they figure out to go to the nudity.
Well, you know, they look at the schedule, or they hit something. I don't know. I like the guy. I was talking, right? We had a huge conference. Labor Notes is a huge conference. Where all the labor unions all come together and they all talk about the latest things that are going on in labor. I tell you, the new all the later the news, print news, all labor, like anything that you see that's printed that has to do with labor, like labor newspapers, labor flyers, and all these people come together. And then you have radio, labor radio, and like Steve Zeltzer and myself, we have labor television. So all labor television, including from Canada, they all come together. So it's a huge conference. You all right? Okay. You all right? Okay. So they all come together, and we're talking, and everybody's talking and doing everything. And I just tell them labor.com, and I'm talking to someone else. And there he is looking at the new part. I didn't know how he got there.
See, I'm really curious. Like when you like, if 95% of the site is not nudity, like how does one actually hone in on the nudity?
Because they want to see it anyway. Yeah. They go lover.com and the first thing.
Oh, lover because it's love.
Lover.com.
Oh, so they're thinking. So that's what they think when they think love is nudity. But we are clueless. But F, from the homepage, no, F-R-O, from the schedule. How would you guess that? If you go to the schedule, how would you figure out which shows have nudity?
You know why? Because they go, this guy must have been, because I was talking for a few minutes. He must have went through the schedule and looked. And as he was looking through the schedule, he probably flipped through each one.
Dr. Susie was like right near the top. So that would be one of the first shows you'd go to.
But how? What is? I mean, it's called Dr. Susie's Speakeasy.
Encyclopedia of Sex.
Oh, boom! There you go. Yeah. So the title of the show is Sex.
Playing with passion there too. So there was kind of a lineup on Sunday night.
And that's the beginning of the
well,
schedule.
Now, so.
Now it's probably down.
Are we on air now?
You betcha.
Okay, I gotta say hi to Bonnie and Steve Siegel. They're in New Jersey. I hope you guys are watching, because if you aren't, I'm going to be very upset. You just got through calling me while I was on the freeway trying to hurry up and get over here by 7:45, because Alexi encouraged her, "You better be there by 7:45. So, Steven Bonnie, you call me, and you better be looking at this program. And I'm going to find out if you looked at it, because I'm going to call you later, okay? All right. Now,
got
Frank,
that out of the way.
How are you going to talk to me tonight? What are you going to talk to me about? Come on, get it on. You're going to...
We?
What?
We? Jay? We just have been. We just have been talking.
Oh, you usually put me on the spot. Come on.
We just started that. gotta
give him a chance, huh? Get
Let him warm up.
Get the juices working and that brain going. Then he put me on the spot. The last time he really put me on the spot.
Some S P S O some so C A L L call D no call E D called so called R radicals, so-called radicals, like will not be on the show because of the nudity and erotic stuff.
So-called radicals?
Frank is saying that some so-called radicals will not be on this show, the Shaman's Den, because of Frank's art, because of the kind of art he does, the erotic and...
Yeah. What's wrong with that? It's art. What the hell's wrong with that?
Plus, the show is just like, it's completely not, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but you know how we are here in America. We mental problems, you know. We don't understand art from...
I-H-E-A heard, hear, you, are, F, E, D, fed up with radicals.
Who, me? No.
We heard that.
Who heard I'm fed up with radicals? I like radicals. I mean, people that are radical, I mean, they have something to say, too. If you don't want to listen, I mean... Then you're limiting yourself.
Well, we heard, I think it was something about being frustrated with, that you were frustrated with, like, you know, as a group, the radicals, that you had some moments of frustration. It's not ringing a bell.
No.
B. L. Blame. Corey and Alexi for that misinformation. Because that's where we heard
well,
it from.
Well, you know, I went out with them once. We went to this thing once.
Fed up with unions, they said.
Oh, yeah, I'm fed up with unions.
Fed up with unions.
Not the radicals, but the unions.
Okay, the unions.
Jesus Christ. I mean, unions. I mean, I'm in the union. And what has happened with unions are that they are not allowing the voices of the people within the unions to come out. In other words, there are people who are tired of this war. There are people who besides tired of the war, they're tired of what Bush is doing to the country. They're in union. They're tired of... healthcare is being destroyed in this, how people are being destroyed through not being able to afford healthcare. Mm-hmm. People are pissed off about the low pay, not being able to buy things. You got a lot of, specifically in San Francisco, 92 murders this year, 92 killings this year. And that's, I think the young black males who are killing themselves and killing each other is because of lack of jobs and lack of things to do besides sell drugs and whatever. So unions should be doing something about that, and they're not. They're not even talking about the things we're talking about. They're not talking about the war.
Why not?
Why not? Mm. I tell you, Frank, money. The guys that wear the suits and the ties in the business, the bureaucrats in the business, in the unions, want to maintain a certain lifestyle and a certain level in the community and in the status in the society. Mm. And that goes with the leaders of the unions. Mm. That's my opinion. I think that's what the deal is.
How? A. How about the... Oh, no. How about the union that J just broke off from the AFL-CIO?
Oh, very good question. Oh, you got me. Good. I want to talk about that because I did a lot of video on that. That's right. You probably heard about that. Okay. Now, what happened was the Change to Win Federation broke away from the AFL-CIO. They broke away, they say, because the AFL-CIO was not organizing members within inter-unions wholly in the United States. Mm. And in fact, the number of union members was declining since the AFL, since going back 50 years. Since the 50s, union members have been declining. Mm. So the position of Change to Win, the Change to Win Federation, which is a number of about 5 or 6 unions, their position was, since the AFL is not organizing, we're going to split and we're going to take our money with us and we are going to organize. Mm. Because if you're walking down the same street, and their position was, if you're walking down the same road and you don't decide to cross the street or to take a different route down this road that you're going or take some kind of variation in this road, then if you don't want to do that, then you're going to get the same results. You're going to keep walking down the same road. And Change to Win said, forget that. We're going to go a separate way. We're going to organize. We're going to get more members, more working class people involved in unions. We're going to get more members because the members have gone in the United States from, at one time in the 30s and 40s and 50s, we had 30% of the Americans were in unions. Today, less than 10% of the working class is in unions. So at one point, it was 30% of all Americans were in unions in the 30s. Now, in 2005, we have less than 9%. So it's not good. Plus, they can't collect enough money.
And in the 30s, they were a radical. The unions were radical.
Much more radical than they are now. Of course. Yeah. Of course, they were much more radical than they were. They are much more radical, Frank. They were doing much more organizing. They were out there in the streets. There were strikes. There were cities, whole cities that would go out on strike, things like that. So it's not
R E B O revolution. Revolutionary.
That's right. Much more revolutionary than they are now. Look, today, everybody's got a pacifier, that working class in their mouth, and they suck on a pacifier when things get bad, especially our leaders.
IHA had a LA labor A activist. F from
Argentina.
Oh, you know him. What's his name?
Vicente.
Yeah, he was a guest on this.
Yeah. Did you see that video? I mean, did you see him on the web where he got hit in the head with a brick or something?
No, is that recent?
No, that was about 6 or 7 months ago.
No.
I saw that. Yeah, but there's a lot of I like what's going on in Argentina. Argentina has the workers have taken over.
Yes,
the means of production and they're producing now.
That's what he was talking about. Right. Frank asked him why the U.S. workers aren't doing the stuff that the Argentinian workers are doing, and he said because the U.S. middle class aspires to be the upper class, and they still think it's possible. This was a couple of years ago he said that.
This hasn't changed. Nothing's changed.
He said as long as they think that, and then they're not going to be revolutionary.
Right, you got a pacifier. They stuck on the pacifier. I think
he said, whereas in Argentina, they knew that there was no possibility of them being upper class. They had nothing to lose.
Right. And when that comes to the United States, when the workers understand that the people who are in charge of the businesses are going to put their foot on the workers, when they understand what happened in Argentina happens here in the United States, when they understand that it's happening here, then they'll wake up. But until then, I don't think they're going to wake up. I don't think so.
They think they are MI middle class.
Exactly. Exactly. I tell you what it is. You got workers in America who are union leaders, okay? Union leaders who do not consider themselves workers. They relate to the people who own the businesses more than they relate to the people who are actually doing the work, who actually pay their salaries.
Union leaders are upper class.
Right, they're upper class. And the workers like, wait a minute now, the workers like postal workers here in the Bay Area, postal workers, technical workers who do the web and all that. Those are the guys, those are the workers, the bankers, they consider themselves the middle class. Service employees too, who answer phones and stuff like that. They consider themselves the middle class, and they will soon, as they work up in the companies, they'll become upper class. And so the workers feel that there is a chance that they can become the upper class,
yes.
Like Frank said,
yes,
and like Vicente said.
Yes.
But that's not going to happen.
Right.
That's not going to happen. That's just a fallacy. That's why they got a pacifier in their mouth. That pacifier is the fact that they think they're going to, when things get rough, they say, well, I'm going to advance after this trouble is over with the company and the economy gets better. I'll suck my thumb until it gets better, and then it'll get better, and then I'll be all right. Well, that's bull.
N-E never have. It never has happened.
That's right. It never has.
They keep thinking it's gonna.
They keep thinking. Well, you know.
But
what?
It is a C O N. It's a con.
It's always a con. That's how the capitalists keep us under control. They keep their foot right on top of us. The Walmarts of the world. You know, they keep the little people. What's that thing that runs around in that little cage?
Treadmill.
The treadmill. They keep us on a treadmill. Yeah. So you know.
And the W.O. the workers think the D.E.M. Demonstration? No, D-E-M. O.
Democrats.
Democrats are the
answer.
W. O. Workers. Party.
Right. No.
No.
Workers have to form their own party in this country because the Democrats are capitalists and they will step on the workers like they've done in the past and take them for granted like they've done in the past. That'll never change. They have to, the workers have to get away from the Democratic Party if they're going to do anything in this country. And to give you an example, this guy Andy Stern, who is the national president of the SEIU, which was, he was instrumental in splitting away this big split that between the FOL-CIO and the Change to Win Federation. Mm-hmm. He was instrumental. Mm-hmm. One of the things that he says is that the problem with labor in this country mm-hmm. is that they feel the Democratic mm-hmm. Party is theirs and that the Democratic mm-hmm. Party will always help them. And that's mm-hmm. bullshit. Mm-hmm. That's crap. The Democrats aren't going to do anything but step on the workers, just like the Republicans have.
We. S. A. We saw. D. E. A. Dean. This was after the last election. Howard Dean was speaking to a group of people. We saw him on C-SPAN. And he was talking about he was talking to our rich people, rich Democrats.
Right.
And he was warning them that they've got to throw some crumbs to the workers.
To the workers.
Because otherwise they're going to lose them. He's not saying you ought to do right by the workers. He's just saying they're starting to get hip. You got to throw them some crumbs or we're going to lose them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good. You picked that. That's good, Frank. See, I know you're a smart guy all the time. He's very smart. Look, what is Dean, who's a doctor, going to do for the working class? He's going to do nothing but lead them down a path to capitalism.
Well, he wasn't saying it to help the workers. No. He was just saying, we're going to lose power if we don't watch out. He said they're going to start revolting if we don't start throwing them some crumbs. So if we want to keep power, we have to throw them a few crumbs. That's what he was saying.
Yeah. The scary part, though, Frank, is that people like Dean, who are in the Democratic Party, who understand that, promote leaders in the labor mm-hmm. who listen to him, mm-hmm. who control the working class, mm-hmm. so that the working class does not revolt
right.
and take over
right.
and burn them out and right. take everything from them.
Right.
So
right.
that's our problem.
Right.
They listen to people like Dean.
Yes.
They shouldn't be listening to him. What we should be doing is forming our own party. Forget the Democrats. Forget the Republicans. Put our own leaders in there, our own politicians, so that we have universal health care for everybody. Everybody can make a living wage in the whole United States.
See?
And Frank's...
A. P. Capitalism? No, cap. Oh, cap the amount of money that somebody can make.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I told you you were smart.
Uh-huh.
Very smart.
Right.
Well, you're going to cap, what's his name? What's the guy's name? Microsoft?
Bill Gates.
$56 billion. What would you cap it to?
What was your cap, B?
For Bill Gates.
1 million A. Year. 1 million a year is the cap.
Is the cap?
Yeah.
Well, what about you? How much you want?
We're far below that. We'd have a long way to go to get anywhere near that.
Come on, tell me. Come
but,
on. What do you want? Go on, tell me.
But everyone. Oh, there would be a minimum, too? No, everyone... would have to get a certain amount of
a living wage.
Yeah.
A living wage, right, Frank?
Right.
A living
wage.
What else
everybody. Was it you said there were other things? One, no, two, one, two, 12,000 a year minimum. Everybody had to make $12,000 a year minimum. Just a minimum amount.
Minimum
of money.
Amount. That's good. That's good. Yeah. You think the capitalists are going to do that?
Not. W. With. Out. F. O. R. Forcing them to. They've got to be forced.
That's right. Oh, you were sharp. You know that? I like that. That guy's sharp. His guy's sharp. He understands. How come you don't go tell the workers then on your channel, on your website, that they got to force the capitalists to do that? Come on.
I just did.
See? He always puts me on the spot to say things like that, and then, you know, we're live on TV. It makes me look like a dummy, okay? He just did, all right. See, he's much smarter than me. I told you, I knew I was going to be put on the spot before you even came out, before I come on the show.
I do every week. He puts somebody on the spot every... No, you do every week? Do whatever... Oh, tell. He tells people every week this kind of thing on this show.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They're going to come and get you.
No.
They're going to come and get you.
No, M. A. No matter who the guest is and what their interests are, the conversation always comes to this sort of thing.
Oh, is that right? That's good.
Yeah.
They're going to come and get you. You know that, don't you?
He's waiting. He can't get arrested for trying.
Oh my God.
I can not F I figure out why they haven't come for you before now. Yeah. Like they wouldn't know what to do with them. Like we have T.A. taken over the public access station in Berkeley. I mean, we're on 7 nights a week, at least 2.5 hours a night, and some nights 6 hours.
What?
Yes. It's been that way for almost a year, I think, now, that we've been on 7 nights a week.
At Public Access?
Yeah, Berkeley Public Access. And they stream, so it's not only Berkeley, but, it, you know, anybody
I
can watch
know.
It.
We have some people that left San Francisco. Who's the, Scott? Not Scott. Some people from San Francisco are over there working at Berkeley.
Oh.
Yeah, we have a few people that left San Francisco Community Access.
I
come to Berkeley.
Don't understand. No, I don't. G. Go. We don't. We actually never go to the facilities. Everything here, and then Corey brings our tapes in every day. So he's the one that actually knows the people that work.
Oh,
there.
Okay.
And we talk on the phone and email to the people, but. I mean, we went in there once, maybe 6 months ago, and she gave us a tour, you know. But, I mean, we never go in there. What? F. Foot. Boom. But. Why? Don't. Frank keeps wondering, why is there enough empty slots on Berkeley's public access channel that we can have so much time? Like, why aren't people clamoring to put stuff on that channel? Or all, or why can I W I with no money do what we do, but no one else. Oh, because it doesn't take money to do it. Like, we don't have any money, and yet we put shows, have shows on there every night. So what's the deal?
Okay, I tell you what the deal is, okay? First of all, people who are there want to get paid who do this, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work putting on a show, and you do it like I do over at Community Access in San Francisco. I do 2 half-an-hour shows a month. Okay, and I try to do new stuff every show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot to go out and video and this. And the union don't want to pay me. They don't want to give me. All they want to give me is the expenses to have the crew there when I do a show in the studio, or they want to pay for the mini DVs that I buy, but they don't want to pay me for the time that I spend. And it's a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to edit. And you know what the you understand
that,
you do editing, Frank. Come on, to put this TV show on, you have to do a lot of stuff.
Yes,
you got to work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
and you're working harder than most people are capable of getting around with it by themselves. You know, you work hard.
Right.
You work hard, and you got a lot of sense.
I am, and I. M A R E V revolutionary. How do you mean that though in this situation? I don't operate in a B O in a box. I don't want to get You're talking about money? You're talking about the money thing? That it's that we don't, or at, or be, A, C, E, accepted. You don't care about making money from what we do, or getting paid for what we do, or being accepted by anybody or group for what we do. So he's saying that's that. In that sense, he's a revolutionary because he doesn't care about that stuff.
Yeah. But you still do the work.
Right. That's what he's saying. We do all the work,
because
but
you
he's
like
not
it?
Thinking
you
in
like
those
doing
terms.
It. He likes doing the work. He, you enjoy
well,
this.
Because we believe in what we're doing, and we want things to be different, and so we see this as what we do to try to make things
it different. Okay. Yeah.
That's the thing that motivates us.
That's the motivation.
Yeah.
Okay. If every worker out there that sees this show is motivated like Frank and his crew, Mike and Erica,
Linda,
and myself are motivated, then everything would change.
See?
I think, and we'd all be better off.
Oh. R. Corey and Alexi.
Corey and Alexi, too, yeah.
Right.
They work hard. They work hard, too. But you're the brains of the organization, over here, dude.
How? Why? Don't the I U N unions S E-C, the value of public access.
Excellent. This guy, I told you, this guy is sharp. This guy is so sharp. How long do you think, you know Steve Zeltzer, you know Steve Zeltzer, yeah?
Yes.
You know me. You know how long we've been messing around with the streaming this video?
Right.
I have made 4 or 5 resolutions to the San Francisco Labor Council, to my union at the national level, about doing exactly what he just said. Do you know what? They look at me like I'm a mad person. They don't want to promote this at all. And I'll give you another example. KPFA.
Mm-hmm.
We try to start a labor collective. Steve Zeltzer, myself, and a few other people are starting a labor collective. KPFA is trying to shut it down. They don't want it.
Wow.
So tell me
why?
Something.
Why are they doing that?
Because of control. Who's got the control? Who's got the power?
I don't want control. Like on Lover. Yeah, when somebody does a show on Lover, well, you know, I mean, Frank doesn't want to have anything to say about the content. He says, all I want you to do is commit to give me content for whatever time slot you commit to.
Right.
And that's all. And no commercials. You can't do commercials. They're the only requirements.
Right. Well, see, on community access television, basically it's the same, but if I wanted to do whatever I wanted to do on the show, my union would shut it down right away. Forget it. They say, the last time I was here, Frank and I had discussion. He says, I want more video. He wants more video from me. He says, don't edit it. Don't do nothing. Just give it to me. I says, my union won't go for that.
Oh, my.
No, it's got to be. They got to have control.
Wow.
It's all about control.
Wow.
It's all about control, Frank.
Wow.
You control you.
That is why. See why. There are no why there is no R E revolution.
Exactly. Oh, you're sharp. You know what? If Frank had control, that would have been revolution already. That would have been revolution years ago. When this started, that was the revolution. You started the revolution, but people can't see. They can't see it. You started the revolution, but people can't see it. They're not looking for a revolution. They are looking at it. They see it, but maybe they don't have enough mental conception.
Radicals, groups, have come to us over the years because of our experience with Lover and asked if we could help them set up their own internet station.
Yeah.
And when we would give them the information, they wouldn't do it because we show them how to do it cheap.
Right.
You start small, you do it cheap, it doesn't cost any money, and you get it out there. Well, they want to do it big. They want to reach thousands of people with every, they don't have the money to do that.
That's right.
And so then they don't do anything.
So, am I right or not? Did you start the revolution or what? Come on. Give me.
I am in a L O long term T R A D tradition. You're in a long tradition of revolutionaries. So it's like this revolution is something that's been ongoing and
part of the tradition. I want it right now. I want the revolutionary to start right now. I want everything to stop. I want the money thing, just like you said. I want it to be. I want it now. I don't want to wait no further. Let's get it started now.
Oh, okay.
He always got some swag to say. Oh my God! Okay.
I don't R E A really understand why it isn't happening right now. B, because it is very easy. It is very easy to do what we're doing. With lover and with everything that we do, it's easy for us to do it. So you don't understand why more people aren't doing it like that. On one level, it's very easy. Yeah. I mean, what we have as an advantage is we have a pretty solid base, so it makes it us able to do stuff.
Yeah, makes it easy for you.
Yeah.
Well, you know how long I've been doing Letter Carrier's TV show. I've been doing that TV show since 1993. Okay? And at one point, about 1998, it grew throughout the United States. There was a show on the East Coast, a show in Phoenix, and it was growing. But, you know, people had to put out a lot of time to get the shows out. And then the union leadership was... You know, you got to edit it. You can't. They wanted to have control. So it was like, you can do this, but you got to do it the way I say do it, the leadership. So it's kind of snuffed it. And,
right.
You know, it kind of stopped it. So.
The S T Y. The style of the MAI mainstream. They want to copy the style of the mainstream rather than creating our own style.
Exactly. You know what? Here's the deal with Community Access Television also. Community Access Television has the content, okay? Like Frank, he's got the content on lover.com. It's got content, okay? But it's not in the commercial form.
Right.
See, they know the people that run the web, the people that run television, the people that run radio, the people with the money know that everybody in the United States is used to their style of doing things. And if you're not doing it in their style, I can't look at that.
Exactly. And it's, yep. And that S stops S T and that style is R E P repressive. The style is repressive. The mainstream style.
The mainstream style is repressive. That's right.
Yes.
I agree.
If there, if this S, if this show was a H half hour, a half hour show all edited real nice and tight with just little things. Right. No. C. O. N. But no content, because it'd have to be cut out.
Right.
No R. No, no D. E. No depth, because it would have to be cut out.
Right.
No H. U. M. A. N. No humanness, because that would have to be all cut out.
That would have to be cut out. Yeah. It would have to be cut out. Yeah, it would. It wouldn't be in. It wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't.
I and how L, how long have we been talking so far just tonight? 46 minutes.
Don't
we'd already
that.
Be well over the half hour
oh,
that
oh,
we
yeah,
could,
yeah,
that
we'd
could
have
do.
To cut out.
Yeah.
We'd have to edit it like right. like I have to do. Yeah, yeah. You know, that's what makes that's what makes
W H I which the which was why I selected this 2 hour format. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So that we would be able to relax into something, get deep, and
yeah.
not have to be all repressed.
Right, that's cool.
Yeah. If it R U N runs S H O R short we oh when I'm because the public access showed that this will go on
uh-huh.
as a 2.5 hour slot.
Right.
So if this runs short, we just plug in some raw footage or something we have to fill in the 2.5 hours to
oh,
fill the time. Or some thing from other people, you know, people are always sending us video. We'll just
oh, yeah.
put
play
something
that.
In there.
Well, we got to fill up the 2.5 hours tonight, then, because I don't want no fill-ins. I don't want no fill-ins, Frank. We're gonna fill in for 2.5 hours, right? Okay. So you just have to keep talking to me. You have to keep talking to me, and we have to bring up things that we might not want to bring up, but we bring them up anyway.
But
what?
The M A. I, the main, S, the mainstream, S, style, C, R, creates, the, F, R, A, creates the frame of R, E, P, repression, and the revolutionary groups buy into it. They accept that. They accept that they should do something that's like a half hour and that this is too long and stuff like that.
Yeah, well see, but the web is going to open that up. That's going to be opened up. Right now, these programmers who write these programs for these computers, they know what they're doing. They're making it complicated so they can keep jobs, okay? Because they could make it simple for you and I to get on the web and do whatever the hell we want to.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to keep it complicated so they can have a job. So that the what's his name? Michael
Bill Gates
can keep collecting his $56 billion.
R E A D read C U cultural subversion now? Okay.
What's that?
That's
what's
a piece
that
Frank wrote. Oh, here let's see.
Here I can get it. It's in there. Yes. This is something I don't have my mic on.
Cultural subversion, huh?
If Frank wrote this before the internet, right? But it kind of predicts it. But F E E feel free to interrupt. Feel free to interrupt as I'm reading it.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay. Culture Subversion, he wrote it in 1991.
That's a long time ago.
This will be personal, but the personal level is the key to understanding the cultural, artistic, and political movement which is taking back technology into the personal control of anyone who has something to say, something to create. It is personal technology, anarchistic technology.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why you have the young anarchists who are running around the city of San Francisco. That's why you have anarchists in the Silicon Valley right now who know that this is happening and they want it to change. They want to have an outlet for how they feel about what's going on with this technology and why they aren't making this technology available for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that anarchy is going to continue to happen in this country. And like you said, the revolution is coming.
It is not like cable TV, which we were told 10 years ago would liberate the person by giving him intimate and direct information and communication channels, but which today is simply more channels for the money types who have always controlled the communication flowing through mass media. This was before. No, this was before 500 channels. Before there were 500 channels. But it S-T
still applies.
Yeah, you're right.
Just more monopolized channels for passive entertainment,
exactly.
Selling, and manipulation of information and of reality.
Right. Benjamin, let me say this.
Yeah.
Hold on. Remember when cable television came out, when it first came out, cable was supposed to be free for everybody to use. And it was supposed to be no commercials. And it was not supposed to be, it was supposed to be cable free. And there was no money involved in cable. Cable was supposed to be access for everyone. But what is it today? What is KQED? What is what they call it radio now? NPR. It was all supposed to be free. It was supposed to be for the community. But what is it? It's commercial. Every goddamn thing in this country is commercial. It's got to make money. That's how they control us.
L. Lover is not commercial.
He's always got something sharp to say. This dude has always got something sharp to say. Always.
The only exception to this is the local access channels, which are kept in the closet and are always in danger of being axed by the cable company. These access channels are a part of the personal technology. This was before we had anything on public access. 10 How many years ago? This was 14 years ago that you wrote this.
14 years ago?
Yeah.
Hey, can I have a copy of that?
Yes.
Okay, good. Excellent. I want a copy.
Personal technology is basically a slip-up of what I have called elsewhere the combine plot. I took the term combine from the Ken Kesey novel, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The combine plot is a hidden dynamic system of power, control, and interest that keeps the tools of creation and of effective change out of the hands of the common people. This keeps the people powerless, keeping the power within an elite. The tools of effective change have been kept out of the hands of the common people by false rituals of education, money, and bulky expensive equipment, which took a cult knowledge to operate. Added to this maze of creative blocks was the false myths about talent and the acceptable quality levels needed to reach people. Acceptable quality levels below which people are trained to not watch or listen.
Now that cult stuff, that cult stuff is those programmers. That's the cult bullshit.
Right.
Because long ago when I was learning back in the 60s how to operate the first computer, which was the IBM 360, all you had to do was punch little dots in the cards, and the cards would reread the computer, and everybody could do a flowchart and operate the goddamn computer. But they made it complicated when they did the when they came out with the machine language and operating system. Only a few little people knew how to do that. A few little cult groups, right?
Yeah.
And you know, let's be real here. They wasn't gonna give it to me. They weren't gonna allow me in the group because I didn't look like them, and you know I didn't think like them. So I was out the group, and you know they weren't gonna let you in the group because you were gonna start a revolution and let everybody know.
When I was in A.R. Art Institute, the San Francisco Art Institute, they G gave me S.H. shit for you. Oh, for using, it was when Frank was in the San Francisco Art Institute, it was just around the time when home video was starting to be sold, but it was, you know, only people with money had them.
Right, right.
But the VCRs, that was just when they were coming out.
Yeah,
and
it was too expensive to buy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But at the art school, you had to use 3/4-inch tapes.
The big ones, they were very expensive.
Which were like, you know, $20, $30 for a 20-minute tape.
Right.
And then you use their equipment because he was a student, but we couldn't even afford the tapes. Forget about that. And the machine were so big and heavy.
Exactly.
It was me and Frank, you know, lugging these machines. And so we had gotten some money, which is another story altogether, from the school, and went out and bought our own little video deck with, you know, the cassette VHS and a camera and a little TV. And Frank used that. We shot all of our video on there, and everybody said, "You'll never be able to use any of your work because you're using these cheap materials instead of the 3/4-inch tapes." And, you know, obviously that's not true because now, you know.
How many movies you made now, Frank?
I mean, on that deck we made, so he would edit them with two remote boxes. We got two decks, and he'd tape them.
Raw edits.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom. I know, stop and go,
right.
I know, I understand. How many movies have you made? Come on.
Oh, man.
Tell everybody.
I don't even know how many. There's lots and lots and lots. I don't know. At least 10 that are like actual things that we put together as movies. The S.A. But the funny thing is one of the same guys, a fellow graduate student that really laid into Frank for this, years later got in a position, you know, one of those upper dudes the kitchen in New York where he was the curator of their video stuff.
Uh-huh.
He paid Frank money to play there one of the tapes that Frank made on that thing that he told Frank he'd never be able to show.
Oh, that was good. Did you feel good about that? Did you give it to him really good?
You
did
betcha.
You give it? Oh, yeah, that's cool. That's really good.
Okay, anyway. All of this is too abstract and philosophical. In this article, I will try to pull these issues down into the real world by using my own artistic experiences as a context. But it's important to realize at the beginning that personal technology, anarchistic technology, is still technology. All technology has hidden, built-in links to the established order of isolation and fragmentation. These links can frustrate attempts to use technology to subvert the established reality.
Exactly.
Only by being always aware of these links to isolation and fragmentation inherent in all technology, can technology be safely used as a tool of cultural subversion? This fact, again, banged me over the head when I was talking to a successful musician who didn't understand why all performers do not stop touring, considering the pollution caused by traveling, and do what he does, which is do everything through telecommunications. I just said you cannot touch through phones, computers, videos, and even through writing. To restore humanity to our culture by using technology, we must know and admit the limitations of that technology. All technology is a double-edged sword. This includes the very first communication technology, writing, reading. We usually think of the invention of writing as extremely liberating, but in so many ways it was, but in so many other ways it confined humanity. For one thing, it placed a fixed linear frame of thinking within the human brain much more than spoken language had done. Moreover, writing, reading created a very exclusive elite for most of the known human history.
Exactly.
Before writing, everyone knew the tribal language. Everyone knew how to paint, sing, dance. Information flowed both between people and within time to the future through this tribal accessible language, both of spoken word and of art. If information did not flow through this tribal channel, that information was lost.
Exactly.
All of this changed when writing was invented.
Now
there was a channel that was not accessible to everyone, a channel that did not easily lose information.
Exactly.
Those who could access this channel had power. Because of this, for most of recorded history, the skill of reading, writing, was monopolized by the ruling elite to maintain its power. This was true even after a larger minority gained limited access to the flowing channel of writing. One of the ways the elite maintained its control was by withdrawing the important ideas, dangerous ideas, both sacred and profane, away from the common people, withdrawing the dangerous ideas into a dead language such as Latin or Greek. Only the members of the elite who went through the rituals of education of the established order, be it religious, political, and or class, could read or speak this dead language of power. There was another channel of flowing information, which was folk art, folk music, and folk words, be it written or spoken. This folk channel was accessible to everyone. It was a dynamic, interactive channel of communication. But the full force of this folk channel was always kept in check by the elite channel with the myth that anything which comes through the folk channel was not worthy or important because it didn't come from the hidden knowledge.
That's exactly what's happening in television. Now, they are controlling the information. They are controlling the television. And if you don't come to their level, nobody wants to watch. Nobody wants to listen. Nobody wants to do anything about it.
But.
What?
That is A. L. Also A. F. A. Falsehood, a fallacy. That they want you to believe. They want you to believe that nobody will watch it if you don't do it in the form that is the mainstream form.
Lover. Exactly. People come to love them. How many hits do you get? You get a lot of hits, huh? How many hits do you get? How many hits?
But Frank won't tell anybody.
That's good. Don't tell nobody. Mm-hmm. Because that way to think.
That is R E V O. Revolutionary.
It's smart. You're very smart. You're very smart.
But I can not L E A leave the house without people coming up to Frank and saying that they've seen him, for example, on BTV. Mm-hmm. He really literally can't leave the house without somebody coming up to mm-hmm. him. And they're always really excited mm-hmm. that they, like, they watch him all the time and they yeah. know the shows. And
I know.
They're excited.
I know. I believe that because yeah. in my telling people, you know, mm-hmm. I'm out there and people say, well, how can I get to Letterkenny? Mm-hmm. I say, go to lover.com. That's all I say. Mm-hmm. And I keep going because, you know, I don't, you know, don't tell me, you know, oh, I went there. I don't want to hear your bullshit. Just go there. And if you want to go, if you want to see my show, you go there and you get some information at the same goddamn time you look at my show. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go? The hell with you. You don't want to see my show anyway. Mm-hmm. And you didn't want to see what Frank was doing. Because you were afraid.
Mm-hmm. But. Even BTV, Berkeley's Public Access, thinks no one, they think that nobody watches BTV. And we say, you know, we can't leave the house. Frank can't leave the house. We tell them that. You know, facts don't count.
Facts don't count. I get a number of people in San Francisco who come up to me sometimes and say, oh, I saw you on TV. I said, yeah, okay, good. I keep going unless they want to talk to me about something that's relevant. Mm-hmm. Just because you saw me on TV, tell me what you saw me say. What I did. Tell me something that's registering in your brain, because if you're just looking at my show, that means you're null and void because you're just looking. Frank, come on. So that's the deal. What's happening with
but
what?
Two, no, they want us thinking no one will watch if we don't use their format.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true.
So, N, so B, BTV thinks they need to M-O more, M-O money. Right, they're stuck in that, thinking they need more money to have better equipment and slicker stuff so people can make more slick things.
Right, exactly what happened with San Francisco, same thing happened.
Yeah.
We were doing, okay, in the beginning, when we first started doing community access television, and we got to get back
to
that.
No, I just wanted to mark so I don't forget.
Okay. Yeah. When we were first doing community access television, and we didn't have all the slick equipment, we had more freedom to do what we wanted to do.
Yes,
it was a lot freer. Now that we got the new television station, all this slick equipment, they want to control every goddamn thing. They don't want us to do shows. They want to have a lottery system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Y. I. Do everything from the house here. That's exactly why we do everything from the house here.
You got more control.
Yeah.
And they need it. So they need the content much. They need it because they're
like, for example, if we wanted to do it there, we actually asked them. We said, we do a 2.5 hour show every week. Would we be able to get the studio? No. There's a limit to how much studio time you can have a week. So right away, we'd have to cut the show down.
That's right.
Couldn't do a 2.5 hour show every week.
That's why I can't do I can't even do live shows in San Francisco. I used to do live shows at least once a month. I do a live show. Now I can't do any because it's not in my time slot. Okay, my time slot is 7 to 7:30 on the first and third Sunday of the month. I have to coordinate the studio with my time slot so it can be aired live. can't do it. It's too hard. Somebody else has a studio.
Wow.
See, that's how they control you. That's how they control you. If I was doing it from home, though, it would be different than I'd shoot it right over there and do it, you know, stream. But that's another thing. In San Francisco, at least in Berkeley, they stream video. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
They
community action. Yeah. It's streaming video.
They aren't even streaming in San Francisco, and they're getting the money to do it, and they won't do it.
Oh, my.
Because they don't have control.
Oh, my.
It's all about control. It's all about control. It's all about control. Okay.
Come back. This control by the elite did not start to break down until the printing press became cost accessible to the members of the common people. This opened to the common people a communication channel which was not rooted in physical time. That is, you write something and someone within another time, another place, reads exactly what you thought. This is the real force which was unlocked by the printing press and not the ability to reach mass amounts of people. Without the printing press being to a large degree accessible to the forces of change, the American and French revolutions may not have happened.
Wow.
But the elite quickly developed strategies to limit access for the common people to this printing channel. The elite spread the myth that to be really effective, a writer had to go through the rituals of the educational system and then be blessed by being recognized by the publishing factory, which became increasingly massive and impersonal. Self-publishing was labeled vanity press.
Right.
The presses that offered this service were seen as cons, as scams. Writers who used this service were thought of as untalented fools who got conned. The individual who believed in this myth of the power of the corporate media system to bestow access to communications and to bestow validity through acceptance was frozen out of any real position for subversive change. All of this is an historical background on which I can talk about the issues of personal technology, anarchistic technology, in the context of cultural subversion. I started out in the late 60s writing for underground papers as a political columnist, sneaking into the mimeograph room at school to run off 100 copies under the protection of a friendly
You
teacher.
Did that, Frank? Oh, my God. You were stealing from the schools? Oh, my God.
Of course, the teacher always, as well as us, got into hot water, and the access to the mimeograph machine was closed. No access, no underground paper. There was not any question about our buying our own mimeograph machine, no money. But it took only a year or so for the underground press to move from the mimeograph stage into being run off at offset print shops. The underground press had its roots going back through the radical press of the 20s and 30s and in the poetry press. The kind of person who put out these papers poured all their personal money into it, then hoped by selling ads, selling papers, by magic, the paper would stay afloat. There was rarely any question of making money on it. But when your nest egg, your dead aunt's money, ads, sales, or whatever was supporting your rag run out, that paper of visions died. But there was always a new paper being born to fill the empty space. There was a rejection of the old standards of quality of both form and content, which had kept the common people from creating. As a result of this rejection, a new way of looking at art, politics, and life was thus created. The underground press became so effective that by the early 70s, there were over 700 of these papers and an underground press network. It became so effective that the FBI targeted the underground press for destruction by a covert war. By using the fact that the underground papers rarely had direct access to a printing press, and by using the organization which developed around the underground press, the FBI and the rest of the combine could bring the underground press into control, into the fold. Around this time, I rejected the record companies who had been placing ads in the underground papers to stop placing ads. That's how they
stopped the money.
It
could stop it.
They're
doing the same thing to micro radio right now. They go in and smash all the equipment and take the equipment from the people. They did that to Liberation Radio in San Francisco. The FBI went in and took all the equipment. The same thing.
We then A B S O R and then absorb the underground press into the mainstream like the B A the Berkeley no the Bay Guardian.
Exactly. The Bay Guardian used to be a good paper, but now, you know, they got total control because it's money. Mm-hmm. They set you up by getting you comfortable to your computers, your lights, your gas, your car, whatever. They get you comfortable with that, and then they slowly, slowly creep into your freedoms and take them away.
Mm-hmm.
They take them away if you don't cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to cooperate, Frank. Otherwise, they're going to come and get you. What?
If you C A R care, if you care about that sort of thing, that's how they can get you. If you care about those kind of comforts, is that what you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
like,
come on, I got this big stomach from eating a lot of chocolate.
Like we, hey, we forgot the chocolate. Like we have,
I like chocolate. I like
we
that.
Have a a comfortable life. We don't have any money and we don't have any perks, but we have a comfortable life.
Yeah.
But we always do our willing to give stuff up. Yeah.
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 Well, see, that's the hard part. Okay. Am I willing to give up the car to drive back and forth across the bay? No. Am I willing to give up the chocolate and the candy and stuff, you know, the things that I know I don't really need it. I should be able to give it up. But it's like the pacifier. They keep giving you the pacifier to keep you under control.
In reality, you don't have to give that stuff up. But is that what you're saying? But they want you to think that you do. And if you're willing to, and then you get to see that you really don't have to give it up. But if you're not willing to give it up, you never see that.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's he's always interesting. He always interesting because he always makes you think, you know. What if I did, you know, what if I was willing, you know? I gotta think about that. I gotta think about giving up my beer or whatever, you know. I gotta think about that. You know, if it push came to shove and I had to, would I be willing to? Damn right. But the push is not there. You know what I mean? The push is not there yet. It's coming, though.
It is always there. The push is always there. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Well, see, I think that they want you to think that you aren't willing to give it up. Because I look at you and I think if it came to it, of course you would. You know, I don't have any doubt about it by just being with you. But you thinking that you might not be willing to.
So
that's the trick. That keeps you kind of like this about it. Yeah.
I got it. Oh, my God.
That is what P-L-U plug you in, that's what plugs you in, thinking that you might not be willing to give it up.
Yeah, you're right.
Why I don't give O U out S stats. You don't give out stats. Is because I don't want people doing things for numbers. He wants people to do what they're doing out of passion and belief, not because of how many people are listening.
That's like when I ask him about how many hits Lola gets. You don't want to talk about it. That's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. That's excellent.
And it screws. SCR screams. It screams out people because the people who have to know the numbers don't end up on Lover. So it only keeps people that can handle that as part of Lover, and it keeps it good.
That's pretty good. You're like one step ahead of everybody. See, I told you it's going to put everybody on the spot. You always put me on the spot like this.
It's like people will say, you know, I'm willing to pay Lover every month. You know, is $50 a month okay? But I need to know how many people are listening. Right. Frank says, I don't give out numbers.
That's the commercial part. You know why? Because then if he's getting these heavy hits, you know what's going to happen? Slowly but surely, they know he's going to need these hits. Then they're going to realize, I can give money. Then I got them. I got you. Then they're going to get you by the balls and squeeze them.
And on
like they got all of us
the on the I N internet the M O more hits you get the more you the more M money you have to pay to the sharks.
That's right.
No, more money you have to pay. Oh, bandwidth.
Bandwidth.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, I don't want H O H U hundreds of thousands of hits. Because we couldn't afford to pay for the bandwidth.
But we got to figure out a way to get around that, Frank. We got to figure out a way to get around that.
I do. You do.
Oh, a secret, huh? It's a secret, huh? You don't tell nobody. You don't tell anybody how to do it.
P. E, people, like, people like us, no, people like, no, we, P, you, put this show. Oh, the way we distribute it around. So, like this show, not only will it be on BTV and archived on our site, but it'll be on Radio for All. Is that what you mean? So, we kind of spread it around. So, that's on other people's servers that people will be listening to this.
That's right. So you got to like spread out the hits.
Right.
So that the hits don't necessarily
We're
come
not
in.
Paying
oh, that's
for
a
all
good
the
idea.
Hits.
That's a good idea. That's a very good idea. I have to remember that.
I
have to remember
don't.
That.
Okay. No. How many people? M. Most of the places that this is. But if I was P. L. plugged in to N numbers, I would not do the show. Because you think, well, gee, is that enough people to bother putting in the time and energy and money to do this show?
That's the same deal with me and the union. Come on, if I start getting, if this show, if I could start the stream, well, if everybody starts coming to, who wants to watch the Letter Carry show, coming to Lover to see the show, and I get a nationwide view from the letter carriers about topics that are not controlled by my union on the show, what do you think would happen? They come and get me. They come and get the show. They take it away from me. But as long as my numbers are low, which is what Frank is saying, but a lot of people are looking at the show because they look at it on Lover, and I get it out. The numbers stay low. Yes. They're happy.
Yes.
But if it gets bigger, they're going to come and get
and
it.
You don't have to reach hundreds of thousands of people to be effective.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. But you know what? Thank you. I don't mean to talk about this. I don't want to talk about it, but here's the deal. See, the deal with me is this. Okay, if I get the topics, content that's controversial with my leadership of the union, you know, and I get a few viewers that are looking at me, and we get challenged, then damn, you know, they're going to come after the show. I'll give you an example. If I talked about the fact that, let's say, for example, I brought it up at two of our conventions. I've said, why aren't we organizing FedEx? Because FedEx is a nationwide corporation, and they fly all of the mail for U.S. Postal Service. So I asked our union, I said, why shouldn't we be organizing FedEx and get them into our union so that we have control in the government and control in the private industry of FedEx? My union doesn't want to do that. But if I put it out on my show, goes out on Lover and people start listening to me like I was on the web. We had this, the letter carriers had a little show. I had a little, what they call
it? Blog?
No, not a blog, but before the blogs, everybody could talk.
Oh, like a chat room?
Yeah, chat room.
Yeah.
And I was going out throughout the whole United States talking about this. And then they got worried about it. And the letter carriers, the people who were listening to this, sort of like, closed me out. They didn't close me out per se, but they stopped talking to me about FedEx. This was like about 4 or 5 years ago. So I know what'll happen. I know exactly what'll happen. If I put this out, people start looking and listening and start questioning the leadership, they'll come and get me. It'll be over. So I agree with you. I have to find ways to get it out without...
What? Are no what? W E well you could do another show on Lover.
On my own, huh?
Right.
I knew he was going to say that. I want the content, don't
and,
you? You want content.
And we, and P, put it on our radio for all, et cetera. That's like an audio show, right? Where you just do the audio portion. Yeah.
Well, you know, listen to
it,
this.
Okay, it don't even have to be video. It could just be audio.
Audio, huh? Yeah.
In fact, I and this is a T R A D trade secret. Most people don't watch video shows. That's our experience from Lover. Most people do not watch the video shows. They listen to the audio stuff.
On
Lover.
Oh, I see.
That's a trade secret. Yeah. The viewer / listenership drops when there's video on and then comes back up when it goes back to audio.
Oh, maybe I have to submit some stuff for audio, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
And A, U, audio is M, much easier.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
All I do is put it on a CD and send it over here.
Huh? Yeah.
CD, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll disguise my voice, though. I have to disguise my voice because I might say something bad.
There. Then you can put it up on Radio for All, which is the place on the internet that people go for source material. So a lot of the alternative news programs that are out there go to Radio for All looking for stuff to put on their shows.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
If you had it up there.
But, you know, actually, what we were doing at KPFA with the Labor Collective was another way to get this exposure. But KPFA is trying to snuff out the Labor Collective. They're trying to snuff us out. They don't want us to put on stuff like that, like challenging the status quo.
They are F A fake R E revolutionaries. KPFA are fake revolutionaries. F A fake U underground. They're fake underground. They are D E C O decoys
for the government.
For the M A main stream.
The decoys. Well, I don't understand, Frank. Come on. Well, I don't understand. What do you mean decoys? So, well, I don't.
People think KPFA is radical.
Right, they do. They think it's not mainstream. They think that KPFA is not mainstream.
Right.
That's why a lot of people listen to it.
Right. Exactly.
But what?
Right. But what Frank is saying, I think, is that they are mainstream, but it's so it gets people thinking that they're listening to something that's radical.
Right.
And it keeps them away from the stuff that's really radical.
Like Frank's radio station. Like Frank, what he's doing on the internet with the audio?
Is that right? Yeah, like all of that stuff. Yes. W. H. Which is the doing, which is why they don't, which is why they want to S. H. Shut out the Labor Collective. Shut you out.
That's true, because they have a labor program with that guy. What's his name? I can't think of his name. It's a 20-minute labor program that comes on, and they don't talk about nothing. And we talk about real stuff, and they don't want us coming on.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, man. So that's okay. He always wakes me up.
Yeah.
I've been sleeping. I'm sleeping. I'm waking up.
Should I go back to this?
Yes.
All right.
I'm going to take that with me. I'm going to take a copy of this with me.
Yeah. Okay. Around this time, I rejected politics as a means for effective subversive change and began looking towards art and magic for an effective channel.
Magic?
I took a filmmaking course learning the technical rituals of 16mm. 16mm was then the home movie technology. But when I did the technological rituals of lighting, shooting, splicing, etc., they took me away from the actual magic of doing. Hidden within these technological rituals are deadening roadblocks to direct personal creative communications. Roadblocks can be gotten around, but why bother when there are direct alternative routes? After the film course, I still had no money to make films. One road would have been to put my time and energy into getting money or a position to make films. But I always have mistrusted the myth of changing the system from within. It never works.
Once you've
compromised, modified, changed, distorted both yourself and your message to get the media channel, why bother sending the message? The system myth is a major vacuum that sucks creative power away from people by putting vast amounts of time between the person and the act of creation.
Let me say something right here. Hold on. When I was in the humanities class, listen to this. I want you to listen to this, Frank. I was in the humanities class, right, in school, okay? Now, I got in a heavy argument with the instructor about art. You know, because in humanities you're learning about art. What to look, how art should look, and how drawing should look. Okay? Right. So I got an argument. My argument was, okay, everybody wants to set Picasso at these enormous amounts of money. But I say, Picasso just painted. Those people that like Picasso, they're fine. What about the people that might like what I like to do? Or what I like to paint, what I paint, what's wrong with it? Okay? So we got into an argument about that. I said, Picasso might be a way of painting, and my way might be a way of painting. It's according to who likes what. It's not Picasso is the established way and everything should look like that. It's who likes what. If somebody likes my art, then let it be. Well, the art teacher got so pissed off with me, he put me out the class.
Whoa.
That was my run in with humanities, because he told me after class, he said,
Where is the teacher? Where is the F-R-E, freedom of D-I? S discussion. Where is the freedom of discussion?
Right. This is it. The freedom of discussion happened after class. He said to me, this is what happened. He said to me, after the class, he says, look, you have to learn what's good art. I said, what the fuck? What? I didn't say that because I was too young to say what. Like today, I say, what do you mean I have to learn what's good art? If I think the work that I do is good, what's the difference? He said, well, I don't want you to come back to my class. So I had dropped humanities.
Oh, my God.
This was back in the 70s. This was back in the 70s. And I needed humanities to finish school, so I had to take it at another school. I had to take it at a junior college to get the class.
Wow.
So...
For a J? What?
Oh, that might be me. I hit the thing.
Something unplugged? Is it, can you hear me? Can you hear Carl?
Maybe it's the, I think it might be the mic. No.
No, it's connection, the connection.
Huh? Maybe it's static electricity on the floor, huh?
It could be something like that.
Can you hear him?
Yeah, it's okay now.
It's okay now. Okay. Okay, what? Four. Four. If. No, 4A. H. J. O. For a joke. Frank took a painting class in college. You know, these are, that's Frank's painting up there. He does those large oil paintings. That's a koala bear.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So he, for a joke, he took an art class in college, and the teacher told, and he paints with his, he puts it, we put a paintbrush instead of the pointer. The teacher told him that he could not critique work that wasn't painted using hands.
So you know, to me that understanding that I got of humanities and that understanding, to me, you know what I look at that today? If I had been smart enough, you know, then if I had, you know, the exposure and a little bit of more intelligence, that's discriminatory.
Yes.
That's discrimination.
Yes.
That's what I would have done if I had any intelligence, then I would have said, okay.
Exactly.
You know, that's discriminatory because you're going to tell me that my art isn't as good as what you do with my capabilities, you know, being in this society. I'm incapable of being in this society in the first place because, you know, I'm not incapable. I'm a human being just like everybody else, but I'm black. In our society, I'm discriminated against on an ongoing basis. And because Frank paints like he paints, that's discrimination. He paints just like anybody else would paint with his capabilities.
Right.
So they discriminate, that's discrimination.
Yes. I and it is what is on the C A N C A N canvas. It's what's on the canvas, not how it got on the canvas.
Exactly.
Counts.
Exactly. That's the same way I felt about Picasso and me. but the teacher didn't feel that way. The instructor felt, you know,
and
Picasso was this and you know.
I B E T I bet people P I Picasso would have agreed with you. Not the teacher.
That's pretty good, right? I agree with you. But you know, I never could meet Picasso. But I met you, and I like your koala bear.
All right, so here.
Let's go back.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying this. This is really good.
Go ahead.
Got a lot of brains.
And this may and this A. P-P-L applies M more now than it did when you wrote it.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. He was way ahead of a lot of people. That's why you get it's up here. It's all up here.
Yeah. Whether the myth is of waiting to get enough money, education, or power before you create, the effect is the same. Waiting for Godot.
Waiting for Godot?
Good, that's a play, Waiting for Godot. With these guys that are just like waiting for, and they're always waiting. For these reasons, I created a no-low-tech form of live performance, which did not need money, theater space, sets, stage lighting, approval, or a particular audience size. This no-low-tech form is vital to work, which is culturally subversive, by expanding the concept of sexuality and reality beyond the frame of taboos. For me, as a no-low-tech artist, the personal technology, anarchistic technology, is a very important dimension.
Anarchistic. I like that. I like that.
I first realized this when I was trying to get established in New York City in the early 70s. I could not find out about art events until after the fact when I read about them in the Village Voice, so I couldn't go to them. So I couldn't meet people with whom I could have gotten something going. One reason for this was there was very little flyering. In New York City, organized crime has a monopoly on putting up posters. I didn't realize how much no flyering isolated people until I moved to Berkeley, where on every telephone pole there were 10, 20, 30 flyers. Was before the movement to keep flyers off of poles in San Francisco and Berkeley.
Yeah, they stopped that. You can't do that anymore.
It's a lot of rules. And I mean, we had to go into court in San Francisco. We owed them $300 because they found two flyers that weren't up according to their rules. Rules which we had no awareness of. No one told us about these rules.
Oh,
we've been postering for 30 years. All of a sudden, they pulled out some old rules and decided to enforce them. And so we went into the court figuring, you know, that they'd let us off. I could have said, I don't know who put those up. He could have said that, but he went in there and he said, I'll take responsibility for putting those flyers up, but I want to say that I didn't know about these rules. And now that I know about the rules, I will, you know, follow your rules. Right. But I didn't know about them. They said, well, too bad. You owe us money.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse. That's when you
That's
get arrested,
what they said.
Frank.
Right.
They said ignorance of the law is no excuse.
That's exactly what they said. But we tried anyway.
I know.
Anyone who has an event, a group, a cause, something to say, can go to a Xerox place, run off hundreds or even thousands of flyers, and staple them up all over town. This direct two-way form of the press plugged me immediately into the community where I could do my work. We have to start seeing flyering, be it on telephone poles or on computer bulletin boards, as a form of personal press, and as such is protected under the freedom of press before the Internet. This was before
the Internet.
Big Brother comes in many forms, from the mafia to government, down to the anti-flyer laws as part of a city's beautification campaign, to corporations such as AT&T and Blockbuster Videos. Just recently, I saw the power of this direct personal press. For years, I have not been able to be booked in the, quote, alternative performance galleries in the Bay Area for various reasons. So, I am at that point again. We're at that point again where nobody will book Frank. Just hearing his name, they say they don't want to have anything to do with
him. Right. They don't want to even get the exposure. I remember that was happening a little while back.
Yeah.
You know, when he put this movie out in outside.
At the
festival.
Right.
They wouldn't let him do any. They wouldn't book him anywhere.
Right.
And then they let him do that little thing at that place. But now they won't let him do anything?
Right. I can We can't even rent a space. We tried rent. Somebody said, try this place. You can rent it. So we rented it. We did a show. We had, you know, a good size audience. And then when we went to rent it again, the guy said, there weren't enough people there. You can only rent it on weeknights, which, you know, we couldn't get the bands to come on the weeknights. And there were people there. They, T, take, what, they, what happens is you pay a certain amount of money to rent it. And
that's
then
right.
After that amount, they take 20% of whatever comes in from the door.
Right.
And so Frank, you know, Frank said, why don't you just set the rental part rate for what you want?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it didn't matter that you were willing to pay the rent they asked. They wanted that 20% to be a certain amount of money, too. And apparently the amount that we did, they said, wasn't enough. So.
That's terrible.
And then he just stops answering Frank's emails at a certain point. T-Y-O. Yoga? Right. We thought, okay. So when we were looking, what kind of places can we rent? Because we're willing to rent.
Right.
And so Frank said, what about all these yoga places that have opened up all over the place?
Yeah, yoga's taking off.
We could see about renting one of those spaces. So we found a place that looked good, that was local. We went in. We looked at the space. It was great. We met the guy. He really liked us. We signed the papers. We were all booked and wrote him a check and everything. And we give him the website. We always do. He called us. He said he checked out the website. He said, you know, I really liked you guys, and I like the idea of doing business with you, but I don't think it would be appropriate for people to do yoga on a Sunday morning in a space that people were naked in the night before.
What difference did that make? Oh, this is great. I just don't want it. They just don't want it, right?
Right.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's terrible. Oh man, that's just. I mean, what is the
spiritual?
Well, they said that yoga is a spiritual practice for people, and people will have a problem with nudity at when they're there doing a spiritual practice, knowing that there was nudity there the night before.
It's because they know it was there. They weren't there to see it, but they know that nudity was there. So,
and somehow that's in conflict with spirituality, just the whole idea of nudity.
What is total spirituality? If you strip yourself of all the clothes and you strip yourself of all of what's going on, you're totally spiritual at that point.
Right.
Well, I don't believe these people were real representing yoga, because I think yoga was done in the nude.
Absolutely.
So they full of shit.
Absolutely.
Those people are full
of
shit.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Yep.
And they need to have the shits too, Frank.
We got to talk about that. Had to come up. M-O-N. Money. Money. Y. O. Yoga. Money yoga. What about money yoga? Money yoga is about money. Yoga is about money now.
Yeah.
It's a trend.
Yeah, it's a trend. It's like a what they call those things?
Fad?
A fad.
Yeah.
It's a fad.
Yeah.
And those people that are involved, which say they're spiritual, they're all about the cash.
Right.
They only want money.
Right.
And you could see that, you know. Yeah. About a hot yoga, cold yoga, floor yoga, rug yoga. Get the hell out of that bush. How about, you know, bush.
In fact, that there, their line. Boy, what was their line? Do you remember? The inner heat. Right, that's what the S. O. So they did not need to. H, E, oh, they didn't. they didn't need to heat the space. Their slogan was, because you draw upon your inner heat.
Yeah. So they didn't heat it at all, huh? They're like, oh, my God, what a bunch of, oh, man. You know.
Right.
Some of these fads and how people.
And we, and we, G, O, got K, kicked out of the space in San Francisco that we were doing it. We had, and yeah, it's like a new age growth center in San Francisco. S.
Second.
Second. S-E. Sex. It's like sex new age. And they were guests on this show, and we told them about how we had just lost our gig at the UC Berkeley campus after a year. And we said, and it was so great, because having a space to do something in on a regular basis, we did something every other week, we created community. And by the time we lost the space a year later, we had a vital community, and people depended on being there. It was like a big deal in their lives. And we said part of it was the fact that we didn't have to pay for the space, and we didn't have to charge people, and it just created this whole environment. They said, you know, and we said, we tape all of it, and then we put it right on public access TV. Right. So it's not only the people that come to it, but anybody who watches TV and can get on the internet, and we stream it on our website. So it's open to everybody. They said, right. You know, you should have that. We would like to offer our space rent-free so you could do that. We said, great. And so sure enough, you know, it happened. It was like vital. It was, and the people that were part of their little group got into it to the point where they really looked forward to when we were coming, and it was shaking things up, at which point the attorney shows up and tells them, legally speaking, they shouldn't give up the control like that. They shouldn't let us videotape and show it on public access. They've got to ask us to sign something saying we won't videotape anything ever again, and that we'll give them back all the tapes from the stuff we did already. Otherwise, we can't keep doing it there. Our what? Tapes. Give them back our tapes.
What'd you tell them? Hell no.
Exactly.
You're crazy.
But, you know, it's like, if you want to keep doing it here, you have to do this. Although it was like, you know, there was nothing to talk about.
Right. So we'll leave then. Hey.
Yeah. Should I keep reading?
Yeah.
Okay. So I put 500 too controversial for the Bay Area flyers up. Maybe we should dig that out again. Asking for leads to spaces in which to perform. From the very first flyer we put up came 3 good leads into the true alternative art scene. Moreover, the flyer directly exposed the true condition of the established alternative art world. We still have that flyer. That is a great idea. We'll pull it out. Rework it.
They're going to come after you, guy. They're going to come after you.
This direct exposing is one of the strengths of the personal technology, anarchistic technology, and the context of cultural subversion. G, H, hence, H-E, L, Helms, Jesse Helms, T, R, tried he had Frank investigated by the General Accounting Office in the early 90s, Senator Jesse Helms, as an obscene artist. And he had them investigate Frank twice.
Yeah, because he was on that Endowment of the Arts. He was on that committee.
Right.
I remember Frank
didn't get money from the National Endowment.
So how could he investigate him? How could he investigate you? Come on, Frank, tell the truth.
So what happened was...
What did you do to Jesse?
They put pressure on the spaces that book artists that don't... Like, so it doesn't matter that Frank doesn't get money. If it's all these alternative art spaces depend on money from the government, and then other... You know, if you get a government grant, and then other people will give you money. So it's all tied up together. And so they don't want to book artists... Oh, here's the flyer. Here's the flyer. Too controversial for the Bay Area. Cannot find a space to perform in the Bay Area.
Oh, my God. Terrible.
Anyway, that's the way they did it. They get the people that depend on government money, then won't book people like Frank because they don't want the heat.
Yeah.
They don't want to risk not getting their money.
Yeah. You should call Jesse Helms and ask him about his black daughter.
Didn't he die?
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah.
Good riddance. What the hell? I mean, the guy lied all his whole life because he had a black daughter. And you know, the mother of the black daughter was the person that pissed me off. Oh, I couldn't do that. After he's dead, then she exposes the fact that he got a black daughter. And he's this ultra racist for 100 years, you know. Can you imagine, you know? He had to live with that. And the black woman, the mother, she pissed me off more than anybody else in this world because she never said anything.
Mm.
Where is her mind at? Mm. Some of these people are really, you know,
what should I do?
They blow me away.
Should I read more? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because that's very interesting.
Be it a camcorder capturing police brutality, or a Xerox zine publishing radical, heretofore unpublishable material, the effect is to decentralize power, putting it into the personal level. I noticed this again last year when Senator Jesse Helms targeted me for investigation for my art. With only one exception, no one from the regular press contacted me to get my reaction or story. Some of the art magazines printed my open letter to Helms and my article on censorship, but I reached a wide national audience when the Spiritual Revolutionary, a newsletter zine by SR Press, printed both. While the Spiritual Revolutionary, TSR, while TSR has a small readership, other zines reprinted my two pieces from TSR without my permission but without editing. Then still other zines reprinted the material from those zines. The effect of this anarchistic grapevine of Xerox scenes is I had exposure to a wide national audience which was made up subcultures. The Combine recognizes the uncontrollable force represented by the direct personal communications through the anarchistic technology. The Combine is trying to put this genie back in the bottle. The easiest and the most obvious way to do this is to censor the physical channels, be it phone lines, the mail, or TV, radio waves, or in this case now the internet. But there are hidden... and... CA, cable, and cable. They are trying to PA pass laws that would do away with public access.
Right now. I know about those laws. Yes. They're trying to do that right now. Yeah.
Yes.
I heard about that. That's true. They'd like to do that. And if that happens, what's going to stop them from censoring their internet? If they could censor community access, what's going to happen to internet, Frank?
They are trying to censor internet. Like WI with the SA same LA laws that they're using to try to get rid of public access channels. B. E. Because. A. Because. Then. The. P. H. O. N. The phone. C. Companies. R. And. C. Cable. Companies. Will. Be. The. O. Only. To. That. Can. That will. C. A. R. Carry. The. I. Internet.
Yeah, but what?
Where? So it's a monopoly then. When that happens, they can call the shots or control what goes on and where and when and everything.
But what about the satellite? That they'll be controlling that too, because if they control the phones, they control the satellites too.
Yes.
Yeah. But what?
My, it is like the G O P and the Democrats. Because you mean the way they're all one thing, even though it makes it look like there's two things. It's really just one.
Yeah,
entity.
Just one. Yeah, you know, those people who know, they know that the GOP and the Democrats are the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're just one of the same people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody knows that. I mean. But what? You're not right. You're right. A lot of people don't.
What? The. L. O. G. Logic. With the logic of the. L. A. Law. Is. Is. S. I. Simple. No. S. I. N. Since. The. Since the C, A, cable company and the phone companies will be C, O, competing. With each other for internet, no, for C, for cable, then there is no monopoly. And no R. E. A. Reason for C. O. C. I. City to get M. Money from the cable company anymore. B, E, because there is no monopoly anymore. Is that it? For cable doesn't has no longer has the monopoly, so they don't have to pay the city anymore. S. Okay. S. So. No public access, since that's where the money comes from for public access. Is the money
it comes
cable.
From the cable. So no money for public access, no monopoly, no more public access.
And so that's the way they're getting rid of public access.
That's the way they're going to do with it. They're going to do that with the internet, too.
Yeah. So do you want to, let's see, there's not... No, we're almost finished. You want me to try to finish it?
Yeah. Try to finish for the show. Yeah.
Okay. But there are hidden means by which the Combine can thwart the direct personal use of technology. One of these is making equipment, such as computers, obsolete every 6 months. Not for any real functional improvement, but for progress. The effect of habitual upgrading is not only that we keep having to buy new software, hardware, but it also creates a false mystery around the computer, very much like the dead language of Latin did in the Dark Ages.
Damn it, that's exactly what they do. You wrote that in 1981?
Yep. Isn't that amazing? But the best way for the Combine to curb
smart,
the use of personal technology is by the standards of, quote, professional quality. When I Xerox published my first two books, I did not run into this wall of professional quality. This is because I sold them directly, personally, at my performances, as well as by the mail through a review in Box of Water, which was a little pamphlet. But when SR Press, Xerox, published my book, Chirotic Magic, we took it, along with my zine, The Chirotic Revolutionary, around to bookstores. The reason why a lot of the bookstores gave for not carrying the book was not the written or the visual contents of the book, but that it had a spiral binding rather than a regular binding. Having a regular binding would boost the cost out of the realm of personal level and into the traditional publishing with its concerns for mass sales. Kyle Griffith, which is the person behind SR Press, is fond of saying that if the book's format is too revolutionary for a bookstore, then the content is also. So,
oh my God, what a...
So it would serve no purpose for us to try to package it differently. I must quickly add that there are quite a few bookstores that are not locked into buying solely from a distributor that will carry personal Xerox published books and zines. Moreover, there are bookstores devoted to personal Xerox publications, for example, Metrophobia, and of all places, Phoenix. These outlets for personal publications will multiply in the coming years. They did multiply. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. M A I N mainstream C A carry zines and W I with in a year of you writing this. Yeah. The mainstream bookstore started carrying zines.
Yeah.
Yes. I have dealt with the barriers of format and technology to personal direct human involvement in every medium I have tried. A lot of people have assumed this was because I was poor, didn't know how to get grants, didn't know how to use technology, or didn't know how to use the system. In reality, even if I had tons of money, I would still use the same no low tech, because that's the best way to take back the creative force from the Combine back into the hands of anyone with a creative urge, or for that matter, a destructive urge. No.
Oh, that's...
We are... Are you running... Oh, out of time. Yeah, we just got the word that we ran out.
This is it's always fun coming on. But But you always amaze me with your insight and the intelligence. Always amaze me and always catch me in the, and put me in a bad way. Huh? I'm in trouble now.
L. A. Flat. Flattery will get you nowhere, or will get you everywhere. Flattery is the W A is the way. B A back on the
show.
Show.
Back on the flattery the way back on the show. That's not flattery. That's the truth, dude. That's the truth. The truth. The truth is.
S. So. Will. You. Do. A.
Show again.
A. Another. No, an A. Alternative. No. A. Oh, yeah. An audio show, a labor show, an audio show for Lover.
For Lover? Yeah, I'll try to do one. I'll try to do one. And plus, I'll try to get some from the Labor Collective, too, some stuff that we, that Labor Collective have archived on KPFA.
That would be great. Yeah.
I can put some, I can get some of that that we have archived. I'll put it on the CD and get it to you.
Yep.
How's that?
That's good.
Good, yeah. Yeah, you always mystify me, Frank. You always do, you know. How the hell do you come up with all of these brilliant ideas? I mean, you know, some of this stuff is revolutionary that he comes up with. And I don't know how you come up with this. Well, you just watch TV or what? It just you just come up with this stuff. What is it? Come on. Tell me the truth. Somebody puts it in there or what? Just think about these things and they come to you.
Is.
And revelations or whatever. What?
Isn't it obvious? On that note.
He always puts me in my place. See that? He did that the last time I was here, too.
So, should we say Carl's name? Do you want your name said? We haven't said your name yet.
What? On TV?
On the show. We haven't introduced
you. They watched the show the last time. They know who I am.
They know who you are. Carl Bryant.
Letter Carriers Today.
And you can tune in to Carl's show. Check out Lover's schedule. Yeah. Lover.com.
Tune in.
Yeah.
And get hip.
All right. So is that it? S. E. E. C. 1. Two and a half hours, no problem filling them up, is not even enough. 2.5 hours isn't even enough.
No, because this guy constantly mystifies me with this. This is like, man, this is in 1991, okay. Too.
Okay, good night, everyone.
Good night. Erica, you didn't say nothing.